Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Remembering the children who lived and died at the Rapid City Indian Boarding School. A memorial walk is planned for Monday, October 8th in Rapid City. The mayor of Rapid City, Steve Allender, has proclaimed this year's Native American Day as the Day of the Grandmothers. And joining us now in the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio at SDPB's Black Hills studio, we have Karen Mortimer and Heather Dawn Thompson with the Minnie Luzahan Okolokichiapi Ambassadors. Karen, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, Lori. We're happy to be here.
And Heather,
thanks. We appreciate it.
Heather, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you for having us.
Let's start with some details about the memorial walk. Is this the first time this walk has been had? Is it an annual tradition? Tell me a little bit about it. Who would like to begin with that?
Sure. This is Heather Dawn Thompson. I'll visit with you a little bit about that. The children that had passed away at the boarding school, of course, has been known by the Native community for some time. And in particular, the grandmothers in this community have worked very hard to preserve their memory. Thus the naming of the day after them. So their memorial has been ongoing since it was a boarding school informally in one way or another. And then approximately 4 or 5 years ago, some traditional medicine people in the community instructed some of us younger folks that we had an affirmative obligation to pray for them and remember them each year. And so we have been doing that informally, quietly. But with the advent of the presentations on the history of the boarding school lands these last few years, there has been an increased interest in healing and knowing more about these children. And so this is the first year in which we have sort of opened up the prayer event. And we hope that the generations after us will continue to do something similar and honor their memory in some capacity.
Karen, we have been talking about this, the Inconvenient Truth presentation and some of the research that has been done for quite some time now. And this is one of those examples of where that telling that story can lead. It's only the beginning. But how do you sort of see this as part of the overall progression?
It is a natural part of the progression. We have, I think 3 years ago, we started partnering and looking at how critical this story, this history is to our community. It actually mirrors some of the treaty and land issues that we can find throughout the United States, most particularly here in South Dakota with the 1868 treaty. It's about land that belonged to the first people and how that's changed. So this history we've been carrying very carefully. It is the truth. It's very carefully and well-researched information that many people in our community don't know. And so it's been a wonderful opportunity to unfold these facts and to help the community learn together. And we hope that it will provide more communication, relationship building, and hopefully healing.
Heather, what's going to happen on Monday? How will the day unfold?
We will begin at 9 a.m. at Sioux Park, down by the creek on the eastern side of Sioux Park, and the mayor and the superintendent of schools and some tribal leaders are going to open the morning and welcome everyone. The public and attendees will be invited to create their own traditional Native American prayer bundles, if they would like, to pray on behalf of the children. We will all walk together approximately 1 mile. Of course, the elders will be driven to the former site of the Rapid City Indian Boarding School, which is now the Sioux San Indian Hospital. And once we arrive on that site, there will be a memorial prayer service and a wiping of the tears ceremony, which is a traditional Lakota ceremony to help those who have passed move on, and those who are here, let them go. We do have families traveling that are descendants of several of the children who did pass away while at the boarding school. Some are coming from Standing Rock, Cheyenne River, Oglala. And so there will be some special honorings to help those families heal.
As you tell this story and as more and more people sort of, you know, experience it, and as Karen, you alluded to, there's still so many people who really don't know the story. So let's explore some of what exactly this boarding school was. And maybe we want to go back to Heather for that question, because these children, they lived here in some shameful circumstances, living conditions. Tell me a little bit about how they ended up at this boarding school, what the goal of it really was.
Sure. So the federal government's policy for quite some time with regards to Native Americans was forced assimilation, to bring them away from their culture and language. And one of the most aggressive manners in which they did that was to remove the children from their homes and forcibly send them far away to off community boarding schools. There was an infrastructure of approximately 40 or so boarding schools throughout the United States. The Carlisle Indian School in Pennsylvania was one of the first and most well-known ones. They were run by a military staff, created by military staff, and the theme of them, the goal of them was to quote-unquote kill the Indian but save the man. And so children from throughout the Dakotas, Montana, Wyoming, were brought to the boarding school here in Rapid City. There were also ones in Flandreau, Pierre, and Chamberlain here in South Dakota. The children, by design, were prohibited and punished for speaking their language. Their traditional clothing, of course, was taken. Much of it is still in archives at the Smithsonian. They were forced to practice Christianity. There was a chapel here in Rapid City on the campus. And they were prohibited largely from going home and visiting their families, with the exception of 1 month or so in the summertime. So there was also, unfortunately, a very high mortality rate, both traveling to the school during very harsh weather conditions at those times, traveling home. Many children tried to escape. Unfortunately, during the winter months, very harsh conditions here in South Dakota, a lot of malnutrition, disease in those confinements. And so there were a large number of children that did pass away here in the Rapid City Indian Boarding School. We have been researching best we can tirelessly. We have been able to identify the names of approximately 45 of them. But we know that the number of children who pass is significantly larger than that. And so we will be focusing on honoring those children who came here and the children who did pass away. Many of the families that are still here in Rapid City, the Native American families, are descendants of the children that were taken from their communities and settled here after being brought to the Rapid City School.
How was discipline handled, or escapes, as you mentioned? How was that handled in the school itself?
There's actually a book by a gentleman named Scott Riney called The Rapid City Indian Boarding School, and he does a really excellent job of going through the discipline and the history of the school. I think it evolved in the beginning. When it started in the 1800s, it was extraordinarily harsh. All children who escaped were tracked down. And again, removed from their homes if they made it home, and forcibly brought back, oftentimes put in some sort of solitary confinement. The boarding schools throughout the United States, corporal punishment was very severe. Children were physically beaten for being caught speaking their language or trying to escape. The malnutrition was quite severe. A lot of children, they had to grow their own food, and so they would oftentimes take food and hide it. One of the deaths at this school was from children taking some food and trying to cook it secretly in the boiler room, and the boiler room exploded, by example. Another set of deaths of the children at the Rapid City Indian Boarding School, two young boys were trying to escape home. The weather was quite severe. They were using the train tracks in order to assist them in finding their way home, and they were run over by the train. So it's not a proud history. It's a very difficult history. But it's a truth that we as a community have to understand in order to move forward together.
How challenging is it to find out, how were deaths handled? How was burial handled? Or, documentation of who had died and how? How difficult is it to put those pieces together?
It's a great question, and I think it's been one of the most frustrating aspects of this entire project is how very unimportant it was to the federal government to keep track. So children who passed on their way coming or going are not noted at all. Children who passed away while at school sometimes are just noted as no longer being enrolled without any specific information as to what happened to them. Mm. Many family members were never notified. Their children simply never came back. There are a handful of graves that are marked that are at the Mountain View Cemetery here in Rapid City, but that's only 9 of the children. We know that some of the children did make it home. Their families were notified on time, and they are buried back at home. But there's a pretty significant portion that are most likely buried in unmarked graves near the school.
And you mentioned, how many families who are, descendants who are living in South Dakota, in areas now. What's the legacy for them, and what do you sort of see the coming together to, read the names and have a memorial walk meaning to those individual families as well as all of us?
Such a good question. Obviously, I don't want to speak on behalf of the families, but as we were doing the presentations, we did have so many families come up to us and express the deep emotional difficulties that they still carried due to these takings of their children. We had families come up and tell us that they had been looking for their family member for over 100 years and didn't know where they were until we had done this research. We had family members knowing that they had passed away, but nobody could ever tell them where or how until we did this research. And it was during those conversations with those families that we realized that we needed to have this healing ceremony for them.
Karen, we've been talking about this, as we mentioned earlier, for a few years now, which really isn't that long of time in the big picture. And I want to ask a little bit about how your insight has changed, and some of the other ambassadors. We've talked about the connections that you feel to each other, but as you continue to learn more and continue to see what's happening and what's possible, how is it changing how you live in the world? I know that's a huge question, but I think you could probably answer it knowing you.
It is a huge question. We say that relationships matter, but history also matters. And so as we develop relationships with more Native, non-Native people in our community, I think just the growth in those relationships are critical, but also the history. And so an example is... So yesterday, I have a 10-year-old granddaughter. I'm a grandmother. I'm thinking about this day that's coming up. And I'm talking to my granddaughter, who is this lovely young 10-year-old, and telling her about the history of 10-year-olds who were taken from their family and their hair was cut off, and they couldn't speak their language, and they didn't see their families maybe for years. Some weren't allowed to go home. And I think the idea of when we learn together and we appreciate this history, that we aren't going to just get over it as non-Native people in our community. And so when we acknowledge that and when we share that, and we didn't go through that, but by having at least the history in that we've embraced that history, that perhaps our relationships can grow better in a better way. And I do see that happening, and the continuation of our relationship building within our community is growing, albeit oftentimes slowly, because we say change happens at the speed of trust. So yeah. We aren't going to just get over it, however.